views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most inspired visionaries on the planet in lighthearted, lively dialogue. Join us as we explore the expansive nature of reality in a down-to-earth way, offering you insights and tools empowering you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Now, here's your host, Christine Upchurch.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Christine Upchurch Show, where we have stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. You know, I'm speaking to you from not exactly in Seattle, but north of Seattle on an island, and I've phoned in for this interview, and the weather is kind of nice out here. But Benny is in the studio here, and we're speaking to you at Hubbard Radio here on KKNW AM 1150 Radio. You might also be listening on WBLQ 1230 AM Radio in Connecticut, Rhode Island, or New York, one of the 35 stations in Australia, or anywhere around the world on Transformation Talk Radio. And I tell you, I'm so glad you joined us here today because we are going to talk about something that is so important and will touch probably all lives in one way or another. But before we get into that and our exciting guest, I'd like to say hello to my better half, who's there in the studio creating the magic so you can hear these wonderful conversations, Mr. Benny Mathers. Good morning, Benny.
Hi, Christine. Now, it doesn't really take an island to get a little bit better of weather than what we have down here.
Okay.
It's about the same. I do miss you regardless.
Oh, and I always miss you okay. when I'm out of studio, but I appreciate that you're able to coordinate, you know, these conversations from all over the place.
It's my honor, my pleasure, and I thank all the interwebs and ethernets and phone lines and
yes.
goddesses and gods of the world and clouds and all that good stuff.
Technology these
yes.
days is wonderful.
Mr. Technology.
You know, Benny, I'm so fascinated by the conversation we're going to have today with our guest, Lisa Smart. Now, you know, one of the things that many of us either have experienced personally or have heard about through the grapevine is something sort of interesting and unusual happening when somebody's present, when somebody else is passing. And you know, they might have some sort of behavior, or, you know, when I was a kid, I remember hearing about my best friend's grandmother reaching out and saying her husband's name. Her husband had already passed over right before she passed over. And that sort of stuck with me. And what's so interesting about this is it's not just anecdotal. And our guest today is going to share how we should be listening more carefully and discerning, you know, some of the differences, but really looking at something universal here so that we can understand the process of dying better. So what I'm talking about again is Lisa Smart. She is a linguist, an educator, and a poet. She founded the Final Words Project, which is an ongoing study devoted to collecting and interpreting the mysterious language at the end of lives. She co-facilitates workshops about language and consciousness with the wonderful Dr. Raymond Moody at universities, hospices, and conferences. And she's the author of this wonderful book called Words at the Threshold, What We Say as We're Nearing Death. I'd like to welcome our guest today, Lisa Smart. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Hello.
You know, Lisa, years and years ago, decades ago, I got very interested in near-death experiences, people who have been, you know, clinically dead for a brief period and then have come back to life. And I know that Dr. Raymond Moody has looked at that. And there have been many books by various people who have passed over and experienced, you know, a different kind of reality. But this is the first time I've read about some similarities between people who were passing over. What was your inspiration for beginning to look at this in sort of a qualitatively scientific way?
Mm. You know, one of the things you said at the top of the show was spot on, is that for many of us, the experience of experiences we have with those who are dying are anecdotal. And what's great about science or research, it gives us a chance to look at the bigger picture. So I was trained as a linguist to always look at the bigger picture of language, right, uh-huh. to understand the patterns and themes. So when my father was in the last 3 weeks of his life, and I began to see and hear really fascinating changes in his language, as a daughter, of course, I was saddened and intrigued, mm-hmm. but as a linguist, I became very curious by the things that emerged in those in the language of those final days.
Yeah, and I've had both my parents pass, and I know that it's overwhelming of a child, even when we're all grown up, to be losing a parent, and yet how wonderful that you actually began paying attention. And how did you go from first of all, what happened with your father that sort of shifted your perspective about this and made you curious about investigating it?
There were several things. The first thing is my father was a complete skeptic. You know, he's the kind of person who, when he heard the word angels, he would roll his eyes like, oh, yeah, right.
right.
All right? So he started talking about angels in the final weeks of his life, and he would point to the corners. And one day he even said, Lisa, you were right about the angels. And then, because I had talked about angels throughout my life, and he used to roll his eyes at me. And then at the very end, about 3 days before he died, he said, the angels say enough, only 3 days left. And indeed, 3 days later, he passed on.
Wow.
So to hear those words from a complete skeptic were very, very startling.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And the other things I heard all kinds of metaphorical language and nonsensical language. He started talking about his modality being broken.
Huh.
You know, so he just talked in fascinating ways, and I recorded everything he said.
That's great. So you have this experience with your father, and you see him opening up to what we may perceive to be another realm. So what made you decide that you wanted to look at this more generally?
Well, after my father's speech changed in such dramatic ways and I had these transcripts, I went to UC Berkeley up the street where I graduated close to my and I went to see what was in the databases there about uh-huh. the language of end of life. I went to the linguistics department thinking there'd be tons of material about this important study or area of study.
Sure.
And indeed, what I found was absolutely nothing about the linguistics of the end of life. There's lots written about toddlers and infancy and language acquisition, but nothing about the language of end of life. And at that point, my life changed because I became completely consumed with what is going on with the linguistics of our final days, and that mm-hmm. was really the beginning of the Final Words Project and 5 years of this research.
So how did you end up connecting with Dr. Raymond Moody?
Well, at about this time, when I realized there's nothing written, or very little, I just started reading books that were related to end of life, everything I could. And one of the books I picked up was Life After Life, written by Raymond Moody. And I had read it when I was 17 and was completely in awe of it back then.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. It's a fabulous book, even today.
It is a fabulous book, and it certainly hasn't been outdated. You know, uh-huh. a real classic lives on, and that book does. And so I reread the book, and synchronistically, my mother saw me reading it, and she said, you know, you're not going to believe this. I have a friend who's going to be teaching with Raymond Moody in a few weeks in Alabama. They're doing a class together. Why don't you go out and just meet him?
Wow.
And so I thought, okay. And then a few days later, my tax refund came. And that was definitely, to me, sort of a sign to move forward. And indeed, I went to this workshop. And the fourth day of the workshop, Raymond started talking about his interest in language, which I never knew. Uh-huh. And he said that he was particularly interested in nonsensical language. Hmm. And he was interested in final words, but was looking for someone who maybe knew something about linguistics to work with him, or, you know, something in to that vein. And oh my goodness.
Talk about synchronicity. You know, perhaps there were all sorts of angels helping to connect you two.
You know, this project has had that feeling about it. From the very beginning, it has had that feeling that this, I don't know, angels or the ancestors have really been around, and it's been really exciting to be part of that kind of energy.
Uh-huh.
And so, and I have had really great support, because I came home from meeting Dr. Moody and said to my husband, oh, God, I have to work with this man. Uh-huh. And our kids were out of the house, so we got in our Mustang, drove out to Georgia, and left everything behind and did this research for several years.
Oh, that's wonderful. And, you know, it seems like it's such important research. I've learned a lot by reading your book. And I'm fascinated by the commonalities. We need to go to a quick break, but when we return, Lisa, I'm going to want you to share with our listeners some of the things about language and sort of topics and where there's this connection from one dying person to another. More with Lisa Smart when we return here in a few moments.
Brand consultant Jen Morgan is here with Radically Distinct Radio to help you take control of your future and maximize your brand's power to produce results. Whether you're an individual trying to reinvent yourself and launch a new venture, or you're an executive trying to reposition your company to modernize your sales and marketing programs, Jen Morgan and the Rad Method empower you to play to your strengths and show up in the world as your most powerful brand. To learn more, go to jenmorgan.com. That's Jen with two N's, Morgan.com, or call 206-972-5366.
What is a brilliant culture? And how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough 5-step process to help you design a culture that is authentic, innovative, and successful. Learn how to create change with Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence, and Claudette Rowley. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit ClaudetteRowley.com.
Gifted intuitive healer and spiritual teacher, Sarah Luce, brings her unique style to the hit show, Small Steps, Big Breakthrough Radio, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Tune in each month as Sarah turns reality on end and shows us how to experience expansive results with simple yet powerful steps. Expect an enlightening bend on what you currently believe is possible. For show details and upcoming topics, visit SarahLuce.com. That's SarahLuce.com.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. As a former research statistician, my scientific background is what many would call sensible. For more than a decade now, I have been working in the field of energy medicine, facilitating sessions and teaching around the world. People from the mainstream often ask me, how did a sensible woman like you end up working in such an alternative field? Implicit in their question is the underlying assumption that the field of subtle energy, such as energy healing and intuition, isn't sensible. But I believe it is very sensible. Even scientists are able to measure aspects of this. Approaching life from an energetic perspective brings us new opportunity for healing and transformation. And from a practical standpoint, even if you can't rationally explain how something works, if you experience a shift from it, then doesn't it make it pretty sensible? Please visit StellarReflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
That's all I want to hear, something special.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. You know, Lisa, before the break, you were talking about how you moved to Georgia so that you could be near Dr. Raymond Moody and you could work with him on this research. I'm kind of curious. You know, I'm a former research statistician, you know, turned healer and self-empowerment coach. But, you know, I've got that, that research background. And I'm very curious, how do you go about researching something that is just so incredibly private as somebody, you know, on their deathbed dying?
You ask a wonderful question, because as a linguist, I was trained originally, you know, you bring a digital recorder wherever you go or a tape recorder and you get down people's utterances. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, in this situation, it's a whole different thing, because as you said, those last days, those last moments, those last hours are very sacred and private moments.
Yes.
And I really struggled with it, and I investigated getting affiliated with the university and maybe doing it more traditionally, academically. And Raymond and I just thought, you know, that's not the way to do this research. The best way is to talk to people, get accounts, invite family members to write down what they're hearing, and uh-huh. really also invite people to track the data in a way that's healing as well as research-oriented. And that's really what we ended up doing. Is it's very anecdotally based, but there, we got such a volume that patterns began to emerge in compelling ways.
Right. And first of all, I have to tell you, I love the fact that you chose to do something that probably is like a little less rigorous in terms of research, but was very respectful of the process. And I also love the fact that you were approaching it in a way that was actually supporting those who were recording the information from their loved ones.
So absolutely.
Lisa, what sorts of patterns emerged as you did your research?
The first pattern was one of metaphors. And what we see is that people begin to speak in very metaphorical, almost symbolic language. And oftentimes, the metaphors are closely associated with the things that really matter to them in their lives. For example, Jeffrey Holder, who was a dancer and choreographer, his son reported his father's last words were, arm 2-3, turn 2-3, swing 2-3, down. Another woman emailed me and told me that her father was a roofing contractor. And as he was passing, he, quote, would awaken and look over at me and smile so big. And he told me, they have all these kitchenettes over there. There were miles and miles of them, and he would be helping build them. So the
builder wanted to help build something on the other side.
That's what he was seeing as he was passing and describing to his daughter this incredible kind of vision that was appearing before him. Now, did he see, a kitchen with pots and pans? Did he see a big dance or an art show, which other people have reported at the threshold? No, the symbols that he saw were the ones that were so connected to his life. It's like as we die, we bring with us the symbols and the metaphors of our lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the findings, and the metaphors often have to do with a big event coming, a momentous mm-hmm. event of some kind, or also of a big journey. So you hear people talking about, my grandmother woke up in the middle of the night and started getting dressed in a long gown that was in the back of the closet. She was sitting at her dressing table putting on jewelry and makeup. She said, I'm getting ready for the big dance. She then lay down on the bed and died. So this big event that people announce a big golf game, a big dinner, a big dance coming up. And that oftentimes represents that death is approaching. And people speak of the metaphor of a journey. They talk about buses or trolleys or looking for their passport.
Uh-huh.
So the first, and it's remarkable. I mean, when you start doing these things, So,
you know, as people are talking about this, it sounds to me like your father actually had some time. It was given timing about it, you know, the 3 days. And
yes.
Are others given that kind of information sometimes that they communicate to their loved ones?
Absolutely. People, you know, very often people do seem to have a sense of when they'll be dying. And people, many times, you may have heard about this, won't die until that very last relative comes to visit them. And
uh-huh.
It's almost as if they have a timing and a sense. People often die on anniversaries or important birthdays. My father really began the dying process on my birthday. And so oftentimes we'll see that, yeah. And there are many, many other patterns. We see lots of repetition at end-of-life language. We see certain types of nonsense. So there are many other patterns. I don't know if you want me to go into detail now or wait until later to tell you more.
Yeah, we're going to go to another quick break. We're going to see if we can fix this sound a little bit better. And and we'll be back here with Lisa Smart on the Christine Upchurch Show. Don't go away.
Miles outside Chicago, can't stop driving, I don't know why. So many questions I need an answer. 2 years later, you're still on my mind. Whatever happened to Amelia Earhart, who holds stars up in the sky? It's true love just wants
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Be unstoppable. Who do executive women count on for up-to-date information on everything from stilettos to being heard in the boardroom? To achieve excellence, you must first take control of your life and develop a successful strategy with the Unstoppable Diva. Tune in to Up or Out with Connie Fife, Mondays 5 p.m. Eastern, as she cuts through the BS to guide you to become bold, connected, and unstoppable. For more information, visit uporout.com.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Are you ready to stop stress, anxiety, and low self-esteem from running your life? Join award-winning author Dr. Friedemann Schaub for Empowerment Radio and learn breakthrough solutions to switch out of survival mode and approach every day with great ease, joy, and purpose. Tune in the first and third Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific to Empowerment Radio with host Dr. Friedemann Schaub on Transformation Talk Radio. Visit the fearandanxietysolution.com to learn more.
I'm Peggy Snow with another Stellar Reflections Minute. Presence, or what we think of as being fully in the moment, is a key element in the process of healing work. As a practitioner facilitating a session, genuine presence takes us out of our heads, where we tend to decide what is and maybe what should be for the client, and moves us into direct experience where we're available to witness the person in their wholeness. In this receptive realm, our senses are heightened and expanded, allowing us to perceive what's seeking to unfold and to interact in the moment. There's something profoundly powerful that happens when healing is approached in this simple, pure way. Balance can be restored and healing can take place on multiple levels. If you'd like more information about the services we offer at Stellar Reflections, visit us at stellarreflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Stars up in the sky.
Welcome back to the Christine Epchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. I'm talking today to Lisa Smart, and she is discussing the subject of her book, Words at the Threshold, and it's a fascinating analysis of what we say as we're nearing death. And this is what Evan Alexander said about her book, A Treasure Trove of Experience and Insight. Now, Lisa, you, before the break, you were talking about how there seems to be metaphoric kinds of things spoken when people are all in the process of dying. And you also said that some people actually, can predict when they're going to pass and say this to other people. Are there other commonalities across this in terms of language and sort of perspective?
Absolutely. One of the patterns is repetition. Many of us, I think, have heard about Steve Jobs' final words, which were, oh, wow, oh, wow, oh, wow.
That's great.
Isn't that remarkable? I know, it's remarkable. And this repetition, you know, we all repeat in our usual conversation, but not at the rate that we find at end of life. So you may hear things like beautiful, so beautiful. Uh-huh. Go away, go away. I'm not ready yet. So repetition is very common. And an extension of repetition is people have something called sustained narratives, where uh-huh. they may start some kind of story, let's say on December 1st. So it might be something like, I'm worried about the train. The train is leaving the station. Uh-huh. And they're talking in some kind of, it's almost dreamlike. So it might be December 1st, but then December 5th, the train is now approaching the station. And then December 10th or 12th, we have now come to the platform. We are waiting for the people to come. But you'll hear these stories uh-huh. that evolve over days or weeks.
Uh-huh. And, so that's, and you, yeah. you see that they coordinate with the person's, dying and ultimate death then.
Absolutely. And you hear people talk about, oh, that this woman in the blue skirt just walked in the door. Uh-huh. And then maybe a few days later, oh, she's coming now closer to me. So how it's just, and people haven't really studied these sustained narratives before systematically. And what you do, you see how they're evolving metaphors over a period of days or weeks even, which I find mm-hmm. remarkable.
You know, Lisa, I know that sometimes when people are ill and they've got fevers, you know, something that they're recovering from, mm-hmm. they can say things that don't make a lot of sense. How is this different from that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. There are two responses to that. I asked hospice nurses and other healthcare professionals about that. One, I was concerned about medications. You know, how are medications affecting what people
right.
are seeing? And one response to that is when you start seeing patterns emerge, no matter the medications that people are taking, then you know that those patterns are stronger than the medications, just as mm-hmm. is true with the near-death experience.
Sure.
And also we know that hospice nurses reported to me that there are visions, and there are hallucinations.
And how can they tell the difference?
Well, you know, hallucinations, they say, are more connected to medications. Generally, they're not necessarily positive. People speak more cryptically and don't make much sense at all. Mm-hmm. They're not complete sentences. Whereas the visions, people generally speak in complete sentences, and they also have this ability of comforting the person who's dying and giving them some sense of reassurance. And oftentimes the visions they have are of people who've died before them or beautiful uh-huh. landscapes.
Interesting. So you're analyzing language, so you're hearing them describe these things.
Absolutely. So I have these accounts or transcripts from healthcare professionals, loved ones, family members, who have shared them with us through the Final Words Project website or through interviews or phone calls and so forth.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Are there other patterns for people who are dying?
Yes. Another pattern is we do hear what sounds nonsensical to us, and there are varieties of nonsense that appear at end of life. Mm-hmm. One is linguistic nonsense, and those are things that just, when you look at the language, don't make sense. So, for example, I'm going up so I can go down.
Oh, that's interesting.
Isn't that wild? It's paradoxical.
Yeah. Right. Grant
me half a full measure.
Half a full measure. Huh.
Yes, I would like some scrambled eggs. But where would you reappear?
Oh, dear.
So this is one form of nonsense that we see, and the first two that I said are paradoxical, which is very common both in the language of the near-death experience and also in the language of dying.
Okay, if we're supporting somebody who is in the dying process, and they start to say some of these things that are nonsensical, what is, from your perspective, based on all the research, what's the best approach to interacting with them so that it can help them with their process?
Whenever you can, see if you can find a common ground. And first, don't be afraid of the language, and know that it might be indications that people are moving into another dimension. We know that the language of the near-death experience is language of paradox. Uh-huh. So my feeling is validate whatever people say. Someone mentioned to me last night that her mother started talking about the alligators, and she wasn't afraid. It wasn't a fearful thing. She was intrigued by the alligators. Uh-huh. Or if someone says something completely nonsensical, find a way to meet them or to ask questions or to say, oh, yes, I will reappear when the eggs are scrambled. Or what would you like me to do? Uh-huh. And find the common ground. And what happens often when people, when you engage someone and validate their language, then there's an opening, and often kind of remarkable insights begin to emerge. But if we step away in fear, we don't leave an opening to connect with that person.
Mm-hmm. So instead of judging it as crazy, to be respectful that on some level it may make perfect sense, and that we should be supporting them and respectful of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And when people have visions or talk about they're looking for their passport because they're between two countries, which mm-hmm. I've heard several times, how can I help you find your passport? Isn't that interesting?
It is. Between two countries. I love that metaphor.
And it's a very common one that emerged in the data.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So the traveling, as you said, is common as well, and that's just sort of like when you're stuck in between worlds. And that's what they talk about with the near death experiences too. It's kind of like this shifting from one world to another, and it must be. I mean, I haven't experienced in this life obviously yet, but it must be sort of a fascinating journey to be like on this path, but not to be in either place fully.
Exactly. So I think of it that when we're with someone we love, we're both a tourist, because we're, most of us, this is unfamiliar territory, right?
Right.
And we're also a guide at the same time. And there really is a sense that people are moving somewhere and going somewhere else. Someone shared a story with me the other day about her partner started talking about Mama Train. Mm-hmm. And everyone was looking at her and was afraid, kind of freaked out, like, what's going on? What is she talking about? Uh-huh. And she said, you know what? Let's get on the bed with her and let's pretend we're the Mama Train. Let's pretend we're the Mama Train. And as soon as they joined her and said, okay, Mama Train, the person completely relaxed and was able to die a few days later with a sense of relaxation. Now, we don't know what exactly the Mama Train was, but the fact that she was able to get peace from people joining. And, you know, we know in conversation, and you probably know this very well as a talk show host, when we get in rapport with people, uh-huh. and step into their world, they feel validated and they feel seen. And that's a very, very important thing.
Yes. And, you know, I also think in terms of like the whole dying situation, many times when somebody is dying, you know, there are loved ones around who really, perhaps they know that the person's been suffering if it's a, you know, a long process and they want them to be at peace. But, you know, we have this sense of not wanting to let go. And that sense of allowing is probably a profound gift to people. And through the words, you can be offering that. That makes so much sense to me, Lisa.
I'm glad. Yes.
So do people ever talk about how the people around them don't want them to go? Like, instead of speaking directly to the person who's there, who's with them, who has resistance to letting them die, do they ever, you know, use words to talk about the situation, about their you know, feeling kind of conflicted, like they need to pass over, but they can't?
You know, you mean the person who's dying expresses that to the living, that directly, or that?
Well, yeah. I know in your book you talk about how sometimes, like, people will be talking to somebody else who's not in the room, doesn't seem to be in the room about that. And I just wanted you to share that.
Yeah, that's very, very common, where as people are coming up to the threshold and very close to dying, they'll start having conversations with people who are unseen by the living, and people often who died previously, so loved ones like fathers, parents, husbands, and you hear these very active conversations, and oftentimes they give people great relief. And as we had talked about before, the difference between visions and hallucinations, many times when someone is dying and they're talking to a loved one, one case, this woman, Sharon, explained how her mother was talking to her husband who had passed, and she was, you know, like I'm sure many of us will be, some anxiety about what's going on and about dying. And then she saw her husband, right, Earl, who had passed away, and she started talking to him very actively and then looked at her daughter and she said, "It's Earl. I feel so much more comfortable now. I feel so much more comfortable now." And that is not an uncommon story. Many people have similar kinds of accounts.
Right, right. This is fascinating, Lisa. We have to go to another quick break, but stay tuned for more.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. Years ago, when facing cancer, without any immediate treatment options, I sought healing by making various life changes. For a while, I followed a very restrictive diet. I often found myself obsessing about which foods were good and which ones were bad. Then one day, I realized I was consuming foods based on fear of not getting well. But I didn't want to make choices out of fear anymore. I decided it was far better for my immune system if I allowed myself to experience the joy that came from, say, eating frozen yogurt, than it was for me to ingest the fear that came from avoiding it. Now, instead of choosing healthy habits based on fear, I try to make choices because they feel right and ultimately bring me joy and ease. How many of your healthy habits are really based on fear? Please visit StellarReflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Tune in to Dynamics of Diversity Radio, scripting the new narrative for immigration with leading experts Kripa Upadhyay and Steve Tanija on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This show will remove the noise that often accompanies discussions on this topic and share a new perspective on the dynamics of immigration and diversity, ever reminding us that together we are all at the core of innovation, excellence, and positive change. Visit OrbitLawPLLC.com for upcoming topics.
What if your body and mind were the compasses to the secrets, mysteries, and magic of life? Glenna Rice, co-host of The Questionable Parent, is inviting you to access all that is possible. Glenna is a 10-year certified veteran access consciousness facilitator who offers an amazing variety of life-changing classes and workshops. Work with Glenna from anywhere with teleclasses and workshops all over the globe. To learn more and see Glenna's current schedule of events, classes, and workshops, visit glennarice.com.
Have you been seeing numbers like 111 and 222 everywhere you go? Do you feel that the universe may be trying to get your attention, perhaps offering a message of some sort? As it turns out, numerical patterns and certain types of geometry form the very fabric of our reality, from cells under a microscope to the astronomy of our night sky. At Stellar Reflections, we offer special sessions which tap into these patterns, designed specifically to support you on your journey. The 111 and 222 activations are sessions activating new patterns in your energy field, which in turn can help you create new patterns in your life. After just one session with a practitioner, either in person or via distance, clients report gaining greater clarity, becoming more intuitive, and honoring their inner truth as they move forward in their lives. Curious about what these transformational sessions might do for you? Call 425-999-9836 or visit stellarreflections.com. That's stellarreflections.com.
Welcome back to the Kristen F. Church Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. Talking to Lisa Smart, and Lisa, before the show ends, I want to make sure we get to talk about your website, how people can reach you, and get access to the book.
Oh, great. Thank you. We have the website called thefinalwordsproject.org, finalwordsproject.org, and we have lots of information there. And also, if people have accounts that they want to share, we have a way you can submit it confidentiality or with your name, and we're still gathering accounts. We want to do this research for as long as we can so that the data we have is really valid. And also you can find out about Words of the Threshold on my website and also, of course, at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and New World Library, my publisher.
Okay, great. And I'm fascinated by something that you mentioned in your book about children.
Mm.
When there are children present with somebody dying, how does that seem to differ from, when an adult is sitting with a dying person?
That's a wonderful question, and something that was one of the most surprising things for me in the research. You know, we find that children seem to be much more in tune with the dying than those who are older. So, for example, one dying grandfather looked at his, I think it was his great-grandchild, uh-huh. and looked and said, how can that baby be in both worlds at once? So he noted, oh. he connected with, isn't that amazing, the toddler?
Oh, and, interesting.
And one of my, do we have time for me to read a little story?
Yes, go ahead.
Great. So this came from someone I interviewed. My wife died peacefully, quite beautifully. Soon after Joanne's passing, my daughter pointed to the bedroom ceiling, and this was her toddler daughter, and uh-huh. said, Mommy, look at all the birds. Isn't that amazing? And the kids seem to see things that the adults don't.
Right.
That seemed very significant to all of us in the room.
Uh-huh.
As beings were coming to help her wherever it is we go, she had entered the realm of the unseen with Joanne, who she called Gijo. Uh-huh. The next night, my daughter slept with me. And then in the middle of the night, there was a big thud as she fell onto the floor. This woke me up with a start and was very unusual for her. I asked her what had happened. She told me, I saw Gijo on a ladder going up, but she was on the top, and I wanted to go with her, but she said, no, honey, you have to go back down. With those words, the young girl fell to the floor.
Oh, that gives me chills.
That story gave me chills, and what's remarkable is that there are many others that I've heard that are similar, and that children seem to be tuned in a way that adults are not. And it's fascinating to me that children's language, as children's language develops and gets more complicated, it seems that their ability to see that unseen world begins to diminish. And in the same way that as we die and our language gets more nonsensical and not as crystallized and refined as in living, as when we're living, then that sort of they enter the unseen world, right? They become part of it. So it seems like there's a relationship between the loosening of language and being connected to the unseen world.
So if children are more connected in terms of the visuals, are they also more connected in the language? Because you talk about sort of some of the nonsensical language that the dying will use. Do children tune into that as well?
Absolutely. Well, there's another great account. A gentleman told me that his, I think it was his grandmother, was sitting and she was dying and she was really babbling a little bit in gibberish. Mm-hmm. As some words were coming that made sense, but some that didn't to him. And there was the toddler sitting on the bed with her, and they were almost having this conversation that made sense to no one else in the room, but the two of them seemed to completely understand one another.
Huh. Interesting. This is so fascinating. So how many dying people, you know, languages and words that they use, have you analyzed to this point?
You know, there's about 100, I think we're approaching that over 150 people, but it's representing now close to 2,000 utterances. In the book, I say 1,500, but now we've gathered more. And the patterns that I talk about, words in the threshold, still, as we get more data, it's just developing those categories. We haven't found too many new patterns or categories. So it seems that the initial findings are holding true as we get more data. But we're about 2,000 utterances now.
Wow. So I know you talked about this a little bit earlier, but I want you just to reiterate for people, because you know, typically, you know, over the span of life, we interact with at least one person, sometimes many people, as they're dying. What do you recommend, sort of in summary, of how we should approach the dying in terms of our interaction with language?
I would say the first thing is, if possible, try not to be afraid of what you might hear. And if you can, open up with a sense of curiosity as if you were in a foreign country and were hearing a new language. And really validate whatever your loved one says, just as we do with children. You know how when children are in imaginary worlds, you know, most of us will meet our child where she or he is, right?
In terms of that. Yeah. Like go ahead and fly on that magic dragon, honey. Yeah, that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So in that way, I would do that. And what's remarkable, sometimes just as children, when we enter their world and we get new insights and revelations by doing that, the same thing can happen with the dying. It's also really important to ask the questions that you have. If someone says, I need my passport, you can ask, oh, tell me more about your passport. You know, what is your passport for? It's okay to engage in nonsensical conversations and to find out more, because some really fascinating things are often revealed. And there is obviously, for many people, they will not communicate. They'll become unresponsive. Mm-hmm. And in those times when people are not communicating through spoken word, just, you know that people can hear much more than we think. All the research in coma survivors and comas show us that people hear much more than we may think. So it's really important when people are dying to speak kindly and with love and really have heart that they probably are hearing much more than you may think.
Mm-hmm. And based on either your research or other research, does the same thing hold true if people are out of the room?
I have heard that, yes, that it does. Yeah. I talked to many hospice nurses and they said, do it. And, you know, really, how could it ever hurt to speak kindly and with love if someone you care about. And there's a lot of reports of telepathic communication at end of life. More nurses than I would have ever imagined talk about working with people at end of life and actually really being able to hear them speak to them telepathically. And these are people who are, you know, scientifically trained. They're not some strange, you know, they're very grounded and analytical folks, right? But they're having these telepathic communications. So, you know, it really, there are indications from near-death experiences and from the research I've done, too, that there may be a real form of telepathy as we get closer to the threshold, and also perhaps even at the beginning of life, because we know how mothers and children communicate sometimes, and fathers and children communicate, it seems, without words. So I, you know, imagine that when you're bedside with someone, if you can, sit with it like prayer or meditation, if they're not speaking, and just send that person their love, because I really believe it can be received.
Yeah. And so, so much of this is about supporting the person who is passing. Are there gifts for those of us who are sitting with somebody who's dying?
I think there are remarkable gifts. I know I had never thought that my father's passing would teach me so much. And partly for me, because I wrote down his final words, and I would invite anybody who's listening to do the same thing when they're bedside. There's something called a shared death experience that Raymond Moody talks about. And there are so many reports that when people die, the people in the room, it's almost as if the portal opens and people who are with them experience, have these remarkable experiences of seeing lights or vapors or mists or feeling the room change. And through tracking final words, just writing them down often, first, we'll get insights that we may not see until weeks or months later when we look back at the words. And also, by tracking those words as our loved ones are dying, it's almost as if we enter into that other dimension or that other experience with them as they leave. And there's a very sacred quality, I think, to the threshold. It really seems that people, for me, and I've heard from so many others, that it's almost as if people are closer to source as they come closer to the end of life.
Wow. You know, Lisa, this hour has flown by, and I'm so grateful for the research that you've done. This is fascinating.
Thank you.
And I'm sure that people are going to want to share this book with, you know, with everybody, because, you know, one way or another, death touches us all. And again, the title of the book is Words at the Threshold: What We Say As We're Nearing Death, and it's by Lisa Smart, S-M-A-R-T-T. You've got an extra T in there. And I thank you for doing this research, and I thank you for joining us here today.
Oh, thank you so much, Christine.
And thank you for joining us here today. I look forward to talking to you again sometime soon. Goodbye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Each week, this show engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about the transformative healing work of Christine, visit www.StellarReflections.com. And for weekly topics, visit www.TransformationTalkRadio.com.
The preceding audio was via a Skype call.